the haunted backbones of America, and live from the G&D Show Studio, this is your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation! Welcome back to the one, the only, mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show, Mr. Demon Hunter.
Yes, sir. There once was a man from Nantucket. I got bleeped already.
Oh, you got beeped. That's a loud beep. I love it. Special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey, are you guys listening? Because they want to know. So check them out at Action Audio Apps. .com And our Canuck friends way out in Canada, up in Canada. Hey, Paranormal, hey!
Hey!
Thanks for being so cool, guys.
Question mark.
Welcome back to studio to the very best listeners, the Shadow Nation. Family listeners, huh? You should insert like a goofy laugh there. That'd be perfect. Anyway, welcome back, guys. Anyway. It's been a whole week, and man, what a week it was, huh?
Was it a week? Has it been a week?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like a week.
I don't know. Every time I break to take coffee, you always pause. I don't know if you're going to... I need room to breathe. There you go.
That was fun. I'm awake now.
Anyway, for new listeners that are just joining us, you guys might notice we have a brand spanking new chat room.
Yeah. We do? How'd that happen?
Nathan put that up there. He's the genius behind the chat room. He put that up there. Brand new fancy one. And it's real easy, guys. Because some of you, the Shadow Nation, I believe, struggle with the old chat room. We're going to find out, though, over the next couple weeks.
We can blame them. That old chat room was pain.
Yeah, all you got to do is go listen live, and it's right there. You can put smiley faces and everything. Wasn't that something? Cool. It is cool.
So proud.
What's going on, Nathan, in the woods of Connecticut? Anything interesting out there?
Blah, 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 blah.
That's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of stuff.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers. I don't know. I went to see a play last night.
You did?
Yeah, I went to see a classic, Arsenic and Old Lace.
That didn't fare well for Abraham Lincoln. That's why I don't go to plays. I won't do them, folks. I won't.
Have a nice night at the theater, Mr. President.
You disrespect America. You commie! America! Anyway.
America.
Yeah.
Home of the theater.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess they're doing something out in, you're going to tell us about the theater. Since we were talking about Lincoln, since I was, at the Ford's Theater. Rubber baby buggy bumper. At the Ford's Theater, the historic Ford's Theater in Washington, beautiful Washington, D.C., where Abraham Lincoln met his fate. They do a reenactment. You'd love this, actually.
They reenact the president getting shot?
Well, I don't think it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe a dude jumps off and breaks his ankle like John Wilkes Booth did and all that. But they have poetry readers from around the world come in, and they read poems from Lincoln's time, and they do a recreation of, what was it, My Fair Cousin or My American Cousin?
My American Cousin.
There you go. They do that play, and you can actually be in the audience and look up at the balcony where Abraham Lincoln was sitting on that fateful evening. That's something I would like to do. I really would.
I wouldn't mind that. I'd enjoy that, sure.
I figured you would. That'd be a historical moment. I guess what they were saying in the news, and this is sad, that this will be the first year ever where actually like more than 100 people showed up for something like this.
What?
Yeah, they've never done this before. They did something smaller scale, and they were like, yeah, some people would show up. Not even the schools would show up.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's, I mean, because I've always been interested. Like out in, of course, Abraham Lincoln from Springfield, Illinois, or when he was a man, he was in Springfield. Of course, he was Kentucky, Indiana. Eventually made his career towards Springfield and, of course, Washington. But he was in Springfield, Illinois, and they're doing this year, Nathan, a recreation. Because you were asking me, are they going to recreate the assassination of President Lincoln? But they're going to do a recreation of the funeral.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been to an Edgar Allan Poe recreation of a funeral, but...
How was that? What's in the box?
Well, the funny thing is, when Edgar Allan Poe actually died, and I think that's why they don't recreate it quite the same way.
Okay.
When he actually died, I guess the casket broke open.
Really?
And people were, like, grabbing parts of him and things like that. It might have been actually when they transferred his body. This is all coming off the top of my head from things I heard a long time ago. And so I can't be 100% sure. This is not your historical section of the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. This
no.
is stuff that I kind of remember from attending the funeral and the memorial service.
Right.
But I guess either when he passed away, I think actually maybe after they moved his casket from one place to another.
Okay.
The casket broke open and people were pulling parts of him out and trying to get pieces of the casket. And maybe like hair and stuff like that. So
how do you pull pieces of the, like clothing maybe?
Clothing, but I mean the hair and stuff like that comes free quickly from the body. And but he...
I guess that's different than, you know, if Elvis's coffin or Michael Jackson most recently broke open, people would be running up there, right?
I suppose so. But remember, Poe wasn't really extremely popular when he died.
Yeah, that's what I was meaning. I guess they knew the significance of the man, the myth.
He probably by the time they moved his body, he was probably more popular by that point. But the first memorial I went to didn't do anything like that. They just did a memorial, like a funeral, and read Poe. And if you remember, I said that when I went. The role of Poe, because, you know, someone was there playing Poe and read from his metaphysical work, Eureka.
Eureka, okay. I've never heard of that one. I know he did the crazy stuff, but...
Well, that's kind of his metaphysical work on the universe.
You just want to say metaphysical. You want to say that.
Metaphysical. But it's, if you read it, it's generations ahead of its time.
Okay.
He was writing about travel, the energy of the human body, traveling through the universe.
Oh, wow.
How the universe rotated around each other and how it was expanding. And this all came before, you know, we had people like Einstein and Stephen Hawking writing about the expanding universe and things like that.
Right.
So it's an incredible work, but they were reading it at the funeral.
So he was a poet and didn't know it. Wait a minute. He was a astrophysicist and didn't know it. Doesn't rhyme.
Well, I wouldn't say a astrophysicist, but he definitely had an insight of what was going on. And John Astin, who played Gomez Adams on the original television series.
You're friends with him.
Family.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the one who played Poe.
Right.
And it was incredible to watch him do it. He was incredible. And then the next time I went back, John Astin did it again, but this time instead of dressing as Poe, he just came in like a nice three-piece suit. And that's when I found out that he is actually a professor of the arts at Johns Hopkins.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's come quite a ways, I'd say. There you go.
The battle of the sound clips has begun. For you first-time listeners to the show, me and Nathan sometimes, and during our rants, we battle with sound clips. You'll hear them go back and forth. So
Since I got the new computer, I haven't been able to do it as much because I don't have the sound clips on the new computer. Yeah. I think one day this week I'm just going to take a day and program the computer with all my battle sound clips there.
Nathan, you know, today is kind of a bittersweet day for us here at the Shadow Nation. Of course, Ghost Man and Demon Hunter, the leaders of the Shadow Nation, right?
Yes.
Tonight is the season finale of the Hunter Be Hunted Walking Dead. Right?
That's a shame.
It is. But it's the first time ever. It's a 90-minute season finale, so you're going to get an extra 30 minutes.
So but still, it means the end.
It does. Not the end. Is it till October, right?
Yeah, they do. They do split it up in the year, so it's not like we're waiting till next spring.
That's terrible, though. They split it up in March, and we don't see it again till October. That's terrible, man. But it's genius. It's a marketing. Maybe we should do six shows, take 6 months off, then come back, and we'll be a huge, huge hit in China.
There you go.
I don't know. Speaking of which, Demon Hunter, Shadow Nation, the show we know and love. You ready?
What show is that, Sean?
Oops! We've done it again.
Da-da-da!
That's right, Shadow Nation! Fans of The Walking Dead from all corners of the world, tonight's guest, he's an American actor. He's received his degree in theater from the University of Colorado at Boulder. He's an accomplished voiceover artist who has been involved with numerous projects. He portrayed a young Paul Newman on the television series Mad Men, and most recently, he's known for his role of Aaron on the AMC smash hit The Walking Dead. Shadow Nation, hold on to your hats, because again, we bring you actor, director, Ross Marquand from The Walking Dead Aaron hit TV show on AMC. I'm going to keep repeating it in case you guys don't know. It's a hit television show. This isn't the second time we brought Aaron. Or, I'm sorry, Ross. This is the first. But we brought you many of The Walking Dead that are good friends of the show. And now Ross is a good friend of the show. We talked to him earlier this week, got him all pumped up for tonight. This is it, man. If you guys aren't getting excited, you need to be, I guess. Get in the chat room.
Go big or go home.
Go big or go home. You're messing up my intro. Anyway, guys, actor, director, Ross Marquand from The Walking Dead. He portrays Aaron. Get in the chat. Get your questions in for him. This is it, guys. Hold on to your hat. Actor Ross Marquand. I just like hearing The Walking Dead. That's one of the best. That's got to be one of the best theme songs out there, right?
That's a good theme song. I like that theme song.
I do.
You were really pushing that introduction there, Sean.
Oh, I wanted to push it. I don't think people know how big that is.
I don't think people know when we're pushing something or just looking for something online, because
really,
when we stretch like that, they don't know if we're really excited or just going, where can I find it? Where did I put it?
I'm super excited. Oh, no, I got the intro right here. The screen did go black there for a minute, folks. That's why you got the... This is it, man!
Blank, Sean. It was my joke. See, we're not gonna be on the air on April 1st.
No, we're not gonna be on April 1st because I don't want to be. You know, I don't want to be April 1st.
Hey, Daddy, I want an Oompa Loompa. I want you to get me an Oompa Loompa right away.
What would you think, Sean? People are calling some of the 10 best practical jokes you can play on people on.
Hey, Daddy, I want to.
Besides that,
she wants an Oompa Loompa.
On April Fool's Day.
I don't know, little brother. What would that be?
Well, some of the April Fool's jokes that I've seen, which I enjoyed, were you can go abstract.
Okay.
Take a photo of yourself or some creepy animal.
Oh.
Put it inside a jar and fill the jar up with like vinegar or something like that it starts to melt or mold, or even water is fine.
With love.
Give it the pickled head in a jar look and leave it in the refrigerator.
A pickled head?
Yes.
Pickled head, you say?
How about bound and gagged?
I've done that before.
Well, not that kind of bound and gagged. take 100 rubber bands.
Rubber baby rubber band bumpers.
Take 100 rubber bands and wrap them around someone's iPhone or Droid.
Okay.
It takes a while to get all those untangled and the person to get to their phone. Toilet surprise.
Oh.
I know you've left a few of those behind, but this is a little different.
Yes.
Tape the scariest photo you can find inside the toilet seat.
That would be good.
You know, especially if... lovely ladies are always complaining that you don't put the toilet seat down. Yeah. This time when they lift it up, they'll get a big surprise.
Right.
And that's only fair, Sean. It's only fair.
It is fair. Do you leave the toilet seat up? Are you one of those?
No, I put the toilet seat down.
Well, you set to pee, so.
Oh. That's just because I'm afraid you're going to sneak up behind me.
Yeah, whatever.
Don't you dare try to stifle me.
I love that. I
don't know if you ever saw the...
Trying to stifle me.
The episode of...
No.
Sherlock Holmes, where he made himself up in, like, urban camouflage.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, it's be the chair. Make yourself up to be the chair so when somebody sits in the chair, you can stand up and freak them out.
Now, was that the new Sherlock Holmes or the
old? That was the new Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, I did see that. Morton, he played great, man. Robert Downey Jr. What doesn't he do good?
Well, this is true. I do enjoy Robert Downey Jr. in just about everything he does. You know, if you have the keys to the vending machine, you can, at work, you can take somebody's personal items and put them inside the vending machine and put them up for sale for everyone.
Okay.
I kind of like that one. You could get in trouble for that one, but hey, you can tape a air horn to the back of a wall where the door opens and where the handle will hit the air horn and set it off.
Right. Oh my goodness.
You know, somebody opens the door, it hits the air horn.
And wonder if they have a heart attack and drop dead. Then you're looking at felony charges, Nathan. Felony charges.
If you have the time and you're capable of it, you could cover somebody's car in Legos.
Oh, that'd be a lot of time. Now, I've done the shrink wrap.
A lot of time.
I've done the shrink wrap around the car thing.
There's the fun with, depending on how much you really want to prank somebody, you can replace the inside of Oreos with toothpaste.
That'd be terrible. Wouldn't that be terrible?
If you work with your friends in the office, you could move their desk into the bathroom.
That's the Shadow Nation. We'll pretend that's the Shadow Nation.
If you have time for costumes, you can make the headless driver costume.
Yeah.
Or, of course, we get reports on this one all the time. People who make the alien costume.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's always fun. Replace Sprite.
Biggie fries.
You can make Sprite and soy sauce into Diet Coke and leave that for someone.
Sprite and soy sauce.
Yep.
Straight up, you got to mix it, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Fill a ketchup bottle with soda. Seal it up really fast, shake it, so that when the person opens it.
What happened to the old salt shaker? You just, you know.
Unscrew. Oh, we used to love that one. You just take the top off the salt shaker, yeah.
Classic.
Filling donuts with mayonnaise.
Oh, God. That's a gag, man.
There's a lot of simple little ones involved just having a photo of Nicolas Cage holding it in front of somebody's peephole and knocking on the door.
Peephole.
Yeah, you know, some people still have peepholes in their door.
And you hold the picture? Somebody'd fall for that, huh? I don't know.
You could fill somebody's office up with balloons. We used to do that to people. Blow up the balloons, fill their car up with it.
That's a lot of work, too.
Yeah, until one day we goofed up, filled them up with helium to save time, and the guy had a convertible. That ruined everything.
Goodbye, sir! Yeah.
The typical old street former tricks where you would...
Yeah.
Make yourself up like a statue. Wait for somebody to come by and move.
Yeah, well, they do that.
Of course,
people get paid
be careful
that.
Doing the ones with
you're
like.
Paid for that.
Be careful doing the ones like taking wheels off people's chairs and stuff like that, so the chairs fall over when they sit down. That people get hurt doing those. And
yeah, sure.
But you know, I like the food jokes. I like making ice cream sundaes out of mashed potatoes and gravy.
Oh, nasty. Put Hershey syrup on mashed potatoes and gravy?
No. You take mashed potatoes and the gravy is like a caramel sauce. And you can add a little food coloring to make it darker if the people like chocolate.
Okay.
That's always a fun one. Everything you can... If this one, you'd have to have started earlier. Planting seeds in somebody's keyboard at work.
What would that do?
Well, if you got water into it, like over the weekend when they come in, there's sprouts growing up through the seeds. But don't do it if your office owns the
the keyboards, folk. We don't want to see you get fired from your job.
Well, yeah. You would have to get those. What were those beans we used in high school? Remember, you had to grow it. You put it in a paper towel, moist paper towel.
The bean sprouts that they sell in all the stores.
They would sprout up real quick.
Yeah. I forget what those were called.
I don't know. They were good, though. Hey, top 10 strangest hobbies. Were you done?
I'm done now. I was trying to give you some stuff there, Sean.
You got on me for dragging out the intro for Ross today.
Well, take forever.
Top 10 strangest hobbies in the world. You ever wondered about this?
Sometimes.
Yeah, well, we've all...
I thought that our hobbies were the strangest hobbies in the world.
Radio. We've all got ways to spend our leisure time. Some of us make crafts. Some of us watch sports. Some of us play games. And some of us get a little more creative, especially in England, merry old England.
I thought you were going to say in the bedroom.
Oh, I don't know. Mooing, number 10. We all know there are people superb at imitating animal calls. Bah, bah.
Let me hear you do that goat call you do so well, Sean.
I can't do it. Anyway, believe it or not, there is such a thing as competitive mooing. Shockingly, these contests tend to take place in rural locations noted for their dairy, like Wisconsin and wherever British people keep cows.
Moo, moo, moo.
British people. Brits. Yes, this sounds absolutely ridiculous, but thankfully, we live in an era of the internet where there is nothing so ridiculous it cannot be filmed and put on YouTube.
Moo.
You can actually watch that, guys. Put in competition mooing.
Moo.
They'll bring that up. Wisconsin has a big thing at the state fair. People love it. Yeah. And the number 9, you ready for it?
I'm always ready.
Faking your death. I thought some guy went to jail for that when a big CEO. Anyway, what a hobby. Fake it. That's what he should say on the grandstand at court, you know, on the jury stand. Just be like,
it's a hobby, Your Honor.
Yeah, I have a freedom to have my hobby. Chuck Lamb is better known as the dead body guy. You guys can look that up. He wanted to be an actor, but unlike most aspiring actors, he was able to admit to himself that he wasn't that very good at speaking roles. So he went for non-speaking roles, namely the role of corpse number 3. Hey, we could do that.
Sure.
I think. To support this, his regular posts staged photos of his death, and hey, it's gotten him a small career as a horror icon.
A horror icon?
Yeah, he even has online tributes. The dead body guy.
Oh.
Yeah, number 8. Competitive dog grooming.
Ooh.
Oh,
I'm sure that job gets hairy.
They got some of them, man. Looks like tigers and stuff. That's not grooming, though. It's like paint. They paint them up. One looks like a panda.
Grooming is grooming. I mean, if you color someone's hair, are you not grooming them?
I have no idea. I always thought grooming was like Manscaped. You know, you trim it up a little bit, put a triangle landing strip. Well, anyway, dog grooming. We all know about dog competitions. What you may not know, Nathan, Shadow Nation, is grooming a poodle.
Is that you have a landing strip? I knew that.
You never know that. Grooming a poodle to look stupid is a highly competitive subculture. Those photos you see floating around the internet of a dog that looks like a Ninja Turtle or a dragon or a panda or a tiger, all real, all part of a competitive dog grooming show. They're mostly put on by National Dog Groomers Association of America, but there are a bunch more across the country, much to the suffering and sadness of dogs across the country. Why is FEMA not picking in that?
I think that FEMA has to pick and choose its battles there. Hmm.
Is it FEMA? I think.
No, FEMA is going to come and save you when you're in a disaster.
Yeah, you said FEMA.
Or at least that's what they're supposed to do.
Well, when they're not doing anything, they could be picketing that.
I think you mean the ASPCA, Sean.
Yes, that's what I meant. Anyway, number 7, milk bottle collecting. I think you do this.
Honestly, I did.
No, you did. You're making it up.
No. Well, I didn't do it as much as my father and my brother did when we were young.
Uh-huh.
But they had milk bottles all over the house and milk, those milk cans. Remember the old milk cans?
Do they still have those for like the rich people on the rich parts?
Well, no, but you can, that's what we used to store milk in. When you had a dairy farm, you would store the milk in the milk cans.
Yeah.
Before they had giant trucks that delivered milk.
Okay.
You stored it in milk cans. A truck would come up, you'd load the milk cans. They'd bring it to the dairy.
Oh.
They would pasteurize it, bottle it, and then deliver it.
And
so we had tons of milk bottles and milk cans all over the farm.
That eliminated jobs when they got rid of the bottle. Remember that?
It really did. Well, but Steve Jobs went on to work in computers, and he did just fine.
That's true. Paul Luke, he likes his milk, he says. Big smiling guy holding bottles of milk. Not as in he enjoys a nice cold glass of milk with lunch, as in he's kind of really into milk as a hobby. So much so that not only does the former milkman and current dairy sales rep have a milk bottle collection, he has over 10,000, Nathan, milk bottles.
I had nowhere near that.
Yeah, 10,000. You wouldn't have China. Your studio would be crazy. Smell like soured milk. Need to collect cottage cheese.
My studio already smells like soured milk from the last time you were here.
Not soured milk. And actually had to build a museum to keep all of them. It's worth explaining that our four decades milk bottles would have various kinds of advertisements and art designs on them, so it's not just a strange hoarding thing. Really. Number six, soap craving. Soap carving.
What's wrong with soap carving?
I don't know.
I used to whittle when I was a kid.
Well, I don't know. Usually use soap to clean yourself. Yep, the practice of criminals in bad prison movies is not just a character quirk. Remember that? John Dillinger escaped from prison in Crown Point, Indiana.
With a bar of soap and some shoe polish.
Mm-hmm. Made a gun or whatever. That's what was supposed to happen anyway. I got a poster here in studio with him holding that little gun. Some said soap, some said wood. I don't know.
Didn't they do like a spoof on that years later? I don't know if it was in Johnny Dangerously or something, but somebody carved a gun out of soap and then polished it in shoe polish. And as they were walking out of the prison, it started to rain and it all bubbled up.
right before he got to the guards, he was like, Mr. Yeah. Bubbles, huh? I don't know. Yep, the practice of criminals, bad prison movies, is not just character quirk, but an actual hobby. People take bars of commercial soap and carve them into beautiful sculptures, which they have to be carefully sealed or they'll kind of cease to exist. This isn't some sort of casual thing. Either soap carving requires a whole set of tools and techniques, mostly learned by carving fruit. Only then can you become a soap carver. I wonder if they have like master positions for soap carver. I'm sure they do.
Master soap carver.
Number five is pretty cool. Tape art. I'm looking at a picture of Jimi Hendrix made completely out of tape. Not like scotch tape, the tape out of the old cassettes, which must be getting harder to find.
Oh yeah, that must be harder to find. Is it made only out of Jimi Hendrix songs?
I don't know. This is simple, elegant art of taking cassette tape, like from the 1980s, pulling out all the magnetic tape from inside the casing and using it to create a portrait of the artist. You're right, Nathan.
There you go.
You have to use the artist, whatever. Even as art hobbies go, this one is fairly obscure and only really got started a few years ago. But there's some pretty impressive examples of the form out there. Look it up, guys, on here. It's pretty cool.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Here's number four, trance spotting. You ever heard of this?
Trance spotting?
Trance spotting. That's it.
No.
Trains and potting. That's how it's spelled. Together, trance spotting. It's not just the name of a movie about heroin.
Train spotting, you jerk.
No, it's not. It's all one word. You wouldn't say...
It's train spotting.
No. You would do two, trains and spotting, right?
It's train spotting.
Okay, so this would be train spotting. All one word, huh? Wow.
Yes.
What did I say? Transpotting?
You said transpotting.
You could do that either way, Nathan. I could make a case.
Don't you dare try to stifle me.
Huh?
Don't you dare try to stifle me.
Don't stifle me, man. You stifle my story.
Yeah, I'm going to make enough mistakes later, and you're going to laugh at me. So I get this one.
Anyway,
I
got to get through this before we can get to the news. Anyway, train spotting, whatever. It's not just the name of a movie about heroin. It's an actual hobby. Train spotting or trans spotting is exactly what it sounds like. People watch for trains. Ah! Dang it! And they see them. They write down the numbers of the train. Train spotters basically collect seeing certain types. I'm ashamed. Certain types tracking trains in certain regions or seeing all the rolling stock from a certain company. That sounds boring. Number three, naval fluff collecting. Now, this is crazy. That's crazy. I mean, how long do you not have to wash to get, you know, naval fluff?
Well, if they're a friend of yours and you supply them, they could be done in a month.
This person has some as far back as 1980. Change buddy. Graham Barker collects his own naval fluff. He has a Guinness World Record recognizing his collection of the stuff for more than 20 years. He started in 1984. 1980 is what the bottle says. keeps it all in carefully labeled jars and has greeted every single question about why he collects Naval Fluff with, why not? That's a good comeback there, Graham. Number two, extreme ironing. This is crazy, Nate. Yes, as in removing the wrinkles from your clothes, that kind of ironing. People find weird or unusual ways to set up their ironing board. This guy's on the side of a cliff ironing his shirt on a board. They actually bring the board. Anyway, granted, extreme ironers are not entirely serious about their hobby. It's as much about exploration, hiking, climbing, and other physical activities.
Okay.
And here's number one, Hikaru Dorandango. No, wait a second. Hikaru Dorandango.
Dorandango.
I tried hard. Anyway, or polishing dirt. If it sounds weird, well, it is. But believe it or not, it's possible. Essentially, you make a ball of mud and draw the moisture out of it while coating it with finer and finer grains of soil. Then you work the dirt by hand, polishing it into a high-gloss sphere. You're making art with your hands, literally. That's it, guys. Top 10 weird.
Those are weird hobbies, Sean.
They are.
But what do you think the 10 weirdest jobs are?
I don't know. What are they?
All right, let's start at number 10.
I'm assuming you know.
I have an idea. Okay. And this comes to me from aplus.com. Aplus.com. Number 10, dog food taster.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've looked some of these up, Sean, because people don't always believe that these are actually jobs. But no, a dog food taster makes about $30,000 a year.
Yeah.
And it is exactly what you think. They taste dog food to see if your dog is going to like it.
Okay.
Now, I haven't been able to find this one a actual salary, but I think it would have to make more than the usual pizza delivery man.
Okay.
At least more than the ones that you see in those movies you like so much, Sean.
I do.
But love scuba that. Delivery pizza. Scuba delivery pizza.
Okay.
Scuba diving pizza delivery man.
Oh.
There we go. Scuba diving pizza delivery man.
Okay.
That's number nine.
Number nine.
How about drying paint watcher?
I could do that.
It's a job, Sean. Yeah. I was not able to find a salary on this one, but it definitely there is at least one gentleman out there that I was able to find who is a professional paint drying watcher.
In the United States.
His job is to watch paint dry.
It can't be a middle-class position because, well, the person that does it, I'm sure they are, but it must be for the rich because I know to paint this house, I could barely afford it, and to have somebody watch it?
Well, no, his job is to watch paint to see how it dries.
Okay.
The company that makes the paint paints the wall. He sits and watches it and see if it dries evenly.
Yeah.
So how about, Sean, and this is one I would like.
How about?
You can have to watch the paint dry. I want a professional sleeper.
Yeah, that'd be a great job to
have. Average salary for a professional sleeper, $31,000 a year.
Wow. To do test studies and stuff, like sleeping?
To do the salaries generally by companies located in sleeping industries, bedding, that kind of things, to sleep on their beds. And say whether or not they're comfortable, uncomfortable, what could be done to make them more comfortable. But here's one I don't want, John. Yeah. Number six,
okay.
Iceberg mover.
Oh, going back to what you just said, though, I do know some people that join these websites and they get like free shoes and stuff for Nike to wear them
oh,
around.
Oh, yeah, that happens all the time. But this is literally a job where you work for a company where, oh, we're designing a new bed. They either send it to you, more likely you go to them and sleep, spend the night in their lab, sleep on their bed. They watch you sleep.
That's spooky.
And see how the bed works out. But number six, Sean, iceberg mover.
Okay.
We've all heard about the stories of people transporting icebergs from, Alaska to Texas to provide water. Well, this actually exists in some places, especially during droughts and things like that. I imagine as the Arctic becomes more and more greenhouse effect, shall we say?
Yeah.
These things happen. What are you going to do? It's probably going to become illegal eventually, I imagine. Wouldn't you, Sean?
Probably,
but
yeah.
Iceberg movers, these icebergs break free anyway.
Yeah.
And these people's jobs are to actually move them from one place to another. But number five, Sean, and I think you'd be good at this
I gotta turn this down and give you some background. What's this next one?
Odor Judge.
Oh, here we go. That's weird. Okay. I can hear you. Go ahead, sir.
Odor Judge, and I've actually looked this one up as well, Sean. Because I didn't know if you'd believe me.
I do. I believe you.
But an odor judge, average salary, $19,000 to $52,000 a year.
Well, that's a nasty job, I would imagine.
Well, these jobs go from everywhere, from people with very high, sophisticated noses, working on everything from perfume to wine, to check the nodes of scent coming from these different products, to armpit sniffers.
I did see something about this, yeah.
Whose job it is to sniff people's armpits after working out wearing particular deodorants.
You know, I seen something on Netflix about this, and the guy kind of looked like you. I was going to say something, but he had a fetish, and he would hire these women to come over, and he'd pay them thousands just to lay there and let him sniff their armpits after they've been jogging and stuff.
Well, that's more of a way to make money being the armpit sniffer.
That's
sniffy.
Crazy.
Sniffy.
Yeah, no. Jed likes it.
Hey, did you know Sean?
Yeah.
I knew Sean. Yeah. Did you know that number four is panda arouser?
Nice. I've heard something like this with elephants and horses.
Yes, there's a job called a panda arouser. Again, no salary was able to be found on this. You must really have to love pandas to go in there blind and find out what exactly is going on.
Oh.
But hey, number three,
okay.
Weird job. Not as weird as some of the ones I've had. I think I could outdo some of these, but okay. Train pusher.
Okay.
Apparently there is a job.
A lot of train stores.
To work as a train pusher. This job basically works in...
A transporter pusher?
No. This is a train pusher. Hmm. But this job basically is in Tokyo, where trains are the main form of travel. And it's not that they're pushing the train, Sean.
Yeah.
That when people are loading themselves into the train, these are people who stand behind the crowd, pushing them into the train itself, making sure they can push everyone into the train...
Yeah.
So the doors can close and the train can move on to the next stop.
Hey, not to interrupt your story, but I just made a playing card disappear. I just learned that magic trick right here live in studio. Can you see it?
Sean, we're on radio.
I know. Look. it's gone. Now you see it? No, I dropped it. But I was learning,
Hey, Sean, number two, and I actually know someone who has this job.
Abracadabra.
Or I did.
Yeah.
They're not with us anymore, but professional mourner.
Really?
Professional mourner, the job of attending funerals and to cry for the deceased.
That has to be for rich people. I don't get it.
Well, you know, they're actually going back in history. Professional mourners were paid on a great occasions for the rich as well as for the less endowed with money because to not have somebody cry at your wake would have been a taboo. So they would hire people to come and This job went everywhere from Jewish culture into Gypsy culture into Anglo-Saxon culture where people were paid to attend a wedding of someone they didn't even know just to cry. And
you can't say
Sean,
gypsies. It's insensitive to the... I read something about that.
You're not allowed to say gypsy anymore?
No, it has to be something American.
I said it was gypsy culture.
You said gypsy, though. You can't say gypsy.
You can't say gypsy anymore.
Well...
I know lots of gypsies, just like I know a lot of Native Americans who prefer to be called Indians.
You can't say that. You can't say redskin. That's insensitive. Remember, they're trying to change the...
I didn't say redskin.
I know, but it was close.
Now you said redskin, which made me say redskin.
So you did,
Sean,
say it.
The number one weirdest job in America. Actually, this one's in China.
Okay.
Weirdest job in the world, so we'll say, because this one's in China.
Okay.
Professional fart smeller.
No!
Job pays up to $50,000 a year.
Oh, my goodness.
These professional nasal...
What's the retirement? Do they have medical and dental?
Well, that's what they are. They work in the medical industry.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they have free medical.
Smelling people's gastro passage, or not their passage, but gastro exploits, and are paid... to determine if someone has something particularly wrong with their bowels from the smell of their farts. Now, this may sound weird to you, Sean, but there are people who from eating particular foods, say someone who does not digest beef well, who eats beef, will create corpus gases in their intestinal tract.
Oh.
These gases are the same gases released by a corpse when your own interior body starts to decay. So basically, this food is rotting inside your stomach. And by eating foods and then allowing these professional fart smellers to examine your gastric... I don't even know where to go with that. Gastric. You're really getting to me.
That's good sound placement right there.
You're a fart machine. You really are.
I lost the fart machine. The kids broke it.
Well, what was it? You had like a 50-cent whoopee cushion.
50 cent? No, it was I paid like $15 for that old fart machine.
Oh, I'm sorry. But these people tell people what they should and should not be eating by the smell of their farts.
Oh my God.
And that's the number one weirdest job in the world that you can actually get paid for, not just a hobby like your hobbies there, Sean. These are careers.
I'd have to check out the medical plan, but I would I would try that out. Hey, Nathan, you know what time it is?
I think I do.
It's time for G&D Show. In the news, everybody. Today's strange news. It's always fresh. It's always exciting. And it's straight from the G&D Show vaults. And it starts right
now.
Hey, Nate, have you ever wanted to go to Germany?
I've always wanted to go to Germany.
Well, that's a good one for you. You better get your bags packed. German social network seeks prostitute tester is the first one up the bat tonight.
Huh? Really?
Yes.
There's a job we didn't have on the 10 weirdest jobs list there.
Yeah. German social network seeks prostitute tester. This comes out of our friends from the Huffington Post.
Please tell me more.
Okay. A social media company catering to Germany's adult industry is creating a new position. I wonder if it's a union position.
Hey, Sean, can I warn people right now?
Oh, you better do it, yeah.
I better warn people right now because this is the G&D drinking game, folks. That's right. Weird news when Sean and I pick the news right out of the papers by the titles. Because we like the titles, we haven't read the news yet, so we make a lot of mistakes. Every time we make a mistake, you take a drink.
Abracadabra.
That's why we recommend that if you are listening to us while driving along in the family huckster there or something and listen to us on podcast, don't play the G&D drinking game. You're going to get caught. And if you're doing anything else that requires any bodily movement because we make a lot of mistakes and you could get in trouble here, folks, please listen responsibly.
And if you hear this bell, guys, that's the drink bell.
That's the drink bell.
So if you drink, if it's one time, it's one drink, two drinks, three. You guys get the pester. Anyway, social media company catering to Germany's adult industry is creating a new position. A sexual position? Yeah. Kaufmich.com, there's going to be a lot of mistakes here, which means buy me in German, has just announced it is hiring a full-time prostitute tester. A willingness to lie down on the job is a requirement if you get our drift. The man or woman chosen will review brothels in Germany, emphasizing service, cleanliness, and compliance with safe sex practices.
Well, that puts you right out, Sean.
I know. Doing this requires having sex with sex workers. According to Kaufmich.com, Ducks manager drank... That's the first one of the night. I popped a cherry tonight. Who only gave his name as Ben on CNBC? WNBC. CNBC. I messed that up. Drink, guys. Having a brothel in Germany is totally legal, but so far, there's not a quality system for them in place. We want to be the trip advisor for brothels. Let's see Shatner do that one. .com. Trip advisor. Ben told CNBC clients on Kaufmich should be able to check the quality of brothels before going there, like you check your hotel online before you book. .com. I can't say the name of that, but you know the...
Besides, you know that place.
Yeah, besides scoring tips for carnal consumers, the ideal candidate, no, that was right, should enjoy having fun with people and not be afraid of contact. Newsers reports, that's the real name too, Newser. Oh, I said Newsers, drink, guys.
It's there we go, wait.
Get it. Do it. What are you waiting on?
I don't have a cool bell like yours.
Oh, I thought you did. Randy reviewers should also have a business degree, a full health certificate, and an ability to be cunning linguist. Yeah, that's it. When it comes to speaking French, according to... Dang, we're out of it. Don't be a cunning linguist when it comes to speaking French. Oui, oui!
I speak the language of love.
My wee wee. According to Newsweek, knowing the ins and outs of brothels would be a plus. Ben said there have been 150 applicants so far, mostly from Germany, but also Belgium. Only 150?
150? I would have thought they'd be chasing guys away with a stick.
Especially most college
kids. I know
kids.
Most of those guys are chasing the girls away with a stick.
Oh, yeah. Mostly from Germany, but also Belgium and the Netherlands and Great Britain. See, we should have never came over. I'd say. Kaufmitch.com was founded in 2009 by three brothers seeking to improve Germany's sex industry by creating a market for independent prostitutes. Our vision, Demon Hunter, is to see sex work as an equal and fully accepted part of society, Julius Dreyer, one of the brothers, said, according to News.com. We believe that all kinds of problems arise from sex workers being isolated and judged. There you go, guys. Huh?
Sex testers are equal opportunity at providing you are 8 inches or more.
Yeah, you're out. four more. I think the American average or the world average is like 5, 4.5, 5. That's
boy,
the average.
Hey, Sean.
That's the average, it says.
Get that bell ready.
Okay.
Just for this name, because please, Lord help me.
Stay safe, guys. Here we go.
Go ahead, hit it. Alara Alaveri.
It was a soap?
Alara Alvendeno. There we go. Okay. Wears a corset 23 hours a day because she wants a 20-inch waist.
Oh, wow.
Venezuelan model Alaria Alveno wears a corset 23 hours a day in order to minimize her waist and maintain it at 20 inches.
Oh.
She's worn the organ-crushing corset 23 hours for the past 6 years, only taking it off to bathe.
It's got to be medical, a condition there.
Yeah, you look at corset wearing down through the ages.
That's true.
You see all those fabulous waists that women had.
That is true.
And that was from years and years and years of having to wear a corset every single day. So she's trying to force it to occur faster by wearing it all day long.
Force it
aside
the corset.
From her waist.
You didn't even use that.
Evandeno, if I'm saying it right, has reconstructed her nose, her mouth, her butt, her breasts, which took 3 separate augmentations
in order
to get the 34 double Ds.
You carried breasts too long. Drink.
Breasts.
Okay.
In an interview with the Barncroft TV, the brunette model explained, the brunette model.
3 drinks.
I wish myself to have the perfect body. Yeah. I wash myself and rest for an hour and then put it back on again. At first, it was terrible. And then I got used to the belt, and it became necessary.
Oh, man.
If you want to see these pictures, folks, go to coed.com, coed.com, to see what 23 hours a day of a corset will do to you.
That's got to be bad. Al Pacino thinks it's bad.
And if Al Pacino thinks so, you know it's wrong.
It's got to be wrong.
Go ahead, Sean.
That's it. I think we're running out of time for the news story, bro.
I got to do this one.
Do it. I'm ready.
Biohackers successfully inject eyeballs with night vision.
Oh!
A big step in humans being turned into superhumans in Tepachi, California. Recently, when a group of biohackers injected night vision on a fellow researcher. There you go. You need your drink, folks.
I'm watching you.
I'm not gonna deprive you all.
Yes.
using chlorine E6 or CE6, which is found in several deep sea fish and used for occasional method of to treat night blindness. Researchers injected the chemical with what was basically a ridiculously fine turkey baster. Oof. And aimed it for the conjunctival sect. Have a drink, why not? The underside of the eye. Okay. I might have said that all wrong, folks, but I'm going through it fast here now. Gabriel Lucindy, who was the guinea pig for the experiment, had his eyeballs stretched open in a clockwork orange style.
You broke my
But he seemed less than phased, according to Mick.com. That's MIC.com. Now I'm going to say it right or wrong. Linsani, LICINE, explained to me. It was a quick greenish black blur across my vision. Yeah. And when it dissolved into my eyes to see if it worked, the researchers went out into the dark fields to see what they could find.
Okay.
Their findings were insane. It started with shapes hung about 10 meters away. I'm talking about the size of a hand, Lincini said.
Okay.
Before long, they were able to go longer distances, recognizing symbols, identifying moving subjects against different backgrounds. The other test, we had people standing in the woods, he says, 50 meters away in the dark. We could figure out where they were, even if they were standing up against trees each time. Lincini had a 100% success rate in the controlled group without being dosed over the test group without being dosed with CE6. Only got the right to the third of the... they only got it right a third of the time.
Too long pause.
You can, yeah. Yeah, you can. on that, who could be next in line, Sean?
Let's get a ruling on the Magic 8-Ball, if that was right or
wrong. Magic 8-Ball, that was wrong. Go ahead. That's fine, Sean. Go ahead. You can read the legend then. How about that?
No, I'm not keen for that. Legend's always yours. That brings us to the next epic G&D show. Wait, that's not the one.
I like that. That's very calming.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Guys, this week's... it's another G&D show original series where Nathan and I comb the world to bring you the latest and greatest in legends, monsters, and myths, and find out if there's any truth to them whatsoever. Tonight's Legend X is...
The Kinderhook Blob.
The Kinderhook Blob. Dun, dun, dun. Then you say your wife's into the, because every year she goes
no,
to...
No, she goes to Blob Fest. This is a different blob, Sean.
Oh, okay.
This comes to us from AmericanMonsters.com.
Oh.
During the 1960s, no drinking on this one, folks. We're past the drinking game.
Yes.
During the 1960s, no less than six eyewitnesses claimed to have encountered a floating entity.
Oh.
Ghostly blob-like creature.
Okay.
That was so intimidating that two armed men fled in mortal terror. The strange tale of this unique apparition begins in the forest surrounding Kinderhood, New York.
Ooh.
A small town whose name literally translates to Children's Corner.
Okay.
See? Kinderhook.
Children's Corner, yeah.
Children's Corner. The language originally from Dutch settlers. Not far from the lake by the same name.
Ooh.
Accounts I've come across regarding this anonymous animal, for lack of a better application, are at times contradictory, and some of the dates are freaky. How do dates get freaky, Sean?
Well,
I've had
a
few freaky dates, but and difficult to confirm. Nevertheless, what we do know for sure is that the initial event that involved a underlying undetermined being occurred in 1962.
Ooh.
the first report of this creature comes to us from an author and New York State New York State
gynecologist
Dean Alal. A guy that checks people's histories.
Genealogist.
Thank you. Bruce Hellenbeck.
Yes.
When Hellenbeck was a 10-year-old boy, he and his cousin were frolicking in the woods behind his parents' house.
Who frolics? Nobody
frolics anymore. I guess it was the 60s. They might have frolicked.
We could frolic.
When Huckleby was 10, he and his cousin were frolicking behind their parents' house when they both saw something. They would never forget. Huckleby would record the bizarre event years later, in 1992.
Nope.
That's 30 years later. In a book he wrote with Paul Barkenhowlman.
What's up, Paul?
Hey, Paul. Yeah. Robert Baltiman and William Byrne, B-R-A-N-N, titled Monsters of the Northwest, according to Huckleback.
No.
When I was 10... years old in 1962, I was up in the woods behind the house with my cousin Kari, who was the age of 7. We both heard a really high pitched whistle noise.
Kissing cousins, were they?
Maybe, I don't know.
It's a girl's name.
The children looked in the direction of the sound, where they were shocked to later see a white object peering at them from behind a knobby pine tree.
I see the picture here. It looks like the Pillsbury Doughman without eyes.
It really does. Yeah. It kind of looks like somebody in a sheet hiding behind a tree.
It does. A fat, portly person. Not fat, portly.
Big boned.
Since we're going to frolic.
Husky. Husky, Sean.
Yes!
Huckleby would clarify
the
statement. I saw it peering, but in fact, it had no eyes. Sounds like a sheet to me.
Yeah.
That I could see.
How could they see
that? Wisely choosing caution over curiosity, the frightened cousins beat a hasty retreat back to the Huckleby's parents' home.
No frolicking back to the house.
No frolicking there. Following the children's encounter,
yes.
Eventually the Enigma would maintain a low profile for 2 years until 1964. On the evening in question, a unnamed man was taking a leisurely hike through the woods.
Wasn't
a leisurely hike through the woods at night?
Yeah.
And he saw
did that.
What he later described as a big white blob gliding down the hill toward him. The sight of this, is that surging, Sean?
Yes.
I don't want to say it wrong. If it's the sight of that surging specter entirely frightened the fellow, and so much that he, in the effort to escape the floating fiend, he leaped over a pond that measured about 6 feet across.
Whatever.
What do you think, Sean?
I don't know. How would we even start?
First of all, this is 1962.
Right. Has there been any current sightings?
That was the age of free love, free drugs, all that stuff.
That's true. They could have seen spots in their eyes and thought, but how would a spot be hiding behind a tree?
I don't know, Sean. Oh. What do you wear when you hide behind a tree?
A spot. Not a spot. Oh. Anyway, Demon Hunter, the Kinderhook blob, that's with this week's.
I don't think we have to check that one out anytime soon.
Yeah, let's cut that one. Let's not cut it out of the book. Let's put it in the back of the book. For a rainy day.
I like the back of the book.
Anyway, Demon Hunter, let's do some frolicking of our own. Let's frolic on over to another G&D show original series. That's right, Shadow Nation. Walking Dead fans around the world, you hear the music. It's time for a G&D show original series. Rot Talk.
Rot Talk, Rot Talk, Rot Talk.
That's right. If you guys don't know what original means, that means Nathan and myself came up with the name, the title, everything to do with
Rot Talk. If you do know what original means, don't be insulted by Sean's vomit.
Each week we talk about the show, America's number one hit show in the history of television that we all know and love, The Walking Dead. And we tell you what we think's going to happen this week and what happened last week on the television show.
That's right, folks. It's time for spoiler alert, because Sean and I are going to talk about everything that we've seen so far. So if you're not caught up with The Walking Dead, this is when you stick your fingers in your ears and go la, 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 because we're going to talk everything Walking Dead, what's happened, what will happen, what we think's happening, what's going to happen, all that stuff.
Good stuff.
It's going to spew out of us right now, and if you don't want to be spoiled, this is where you hit fast forward on your... Well, there's not a lot of people in the chat room, so let's say on your iPad, hit fast forward right now so that when you hear the music playing, you know we got done.
Yeah. I don't know, and you guys that aren't getting in chat at ghostanddemon.com every Sunday night, you're missing out a lot, because these epic guests that are coming on The Walking Dead, they answer questions, and sometimes they give out prizes to the people that are there live to answer questions and to send in questions, so you're lost. Try to do it in the future. Anyway, Demon Hunter, last week, Michonne, Rick lost his lid, finally. And, you know, a lot of people have mixed emotions there. They all knew that Stupid was beating his wife, Pete.
Everybody knew that.
Everybody.
Wouldn't you do something if you knew your neighbor was beating his wife?
I don't know, but man, he gave Rick a good to go there. I thought Rick would totally pummel him. I mean, you go for Rick.
I would have thought so, too. This guy had fighting skills on the level of the governor there, man.
He did, man. And Rick, I mean, Rick finally got him. And of course, that, everybody was talking about that being an epic scene from the comic books.
It was an epic scene from the comic books. And I will also point out that the actor who plays Rick... Name, Sean. Name.
Andrew Lincoln.
There you go, Andrew Lincoln. Said he wanted it to be as down and dirty and messy as possible. He wanted to stretch it out. He wanted to make it hard. He wanted to make it look as real as possible. So it was a no-hold-barred kind of match.
Yeah, and I read up some stuff on that, and that's how I found out that that was from the comic book, that scene. So, you know, here lately you've been seeing on this show, The Walking Dead, at the beginning they kind of got away from the comic book, I understand, and now it's kind of coming back too. Have you noticed that?
Well, there's a lot of the comic book fans starting to follow the TV series. In the beginning, when it pulled away from the comic book, they kind of pulled away.
Yeah.
In fear that they were going to be distracted from the comic book story. But now I think everybody's getting into their head that it's two different universes, and it can criss and cross at times and not ruin it for either side.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, last week, everybody knew it was boiling up that Rick was going to take it upon himself. And I think, like most battered women, unfortunately, the chick, Pete's wife, is going to come out in defense of her husband. She could have ended it all right there saying, listen, I asked Rick to help me. She chose to keep her mouth shut. Dina is ready, it looks like, to kick Rick out of the group. Michonne come in, Michonne, and she busted Rick in the back of the head, knocking him out. What was that all about?
Well, what was that all about, Sean? She's the other sheriff.
This is true.
It's her job to stop these kind of things. And Rick was not only provoking this to a point where, you know, Diana wouldn't have any chance or choice but to kick him out. She was trying to save his position inside the group.
Yeah.
I think she did the right thing. I wouldn't want it done to me, but I think she did the right thing.
Yeah, anyway, guys, Nathan and me were... I think you're right. I do think you're right, and I wonder how Rick's going to take that when he wakes up tonight. If he's going to be happy or sad. Was this to make Andrew Lincoln, Rick... A, happy, or B, sad?
Well, Sean, let me ask you this. Hour and a half episode tonight.
Yes, first time ever.
Is Rick's point going to be proven during this episode, or are we going to be left hanging on for an entire season to see whether or not Rick is going to remain in the group? Because, let's face it, the Alexandria storyline in the comic books is a long storyline. I mean, people were complaining that the prison took too long for them to get out of the prison. But, I mean, that's where their home was. They were safe there.
Yeah.
And it took a while for the governor to build up the forces to come after them. But, you know, the Alexandria storyline is kind of a long stretch in the comic books. So are they maybe pushing the story forward so that they do not face the same problem of people getting bored of the storyline?
Well, I think they are. You've had about three episodes of the group getting really in tune with their wussy self, I guess you would say, trying to get back to civilization. And you liked that term, didn't you? Wussy.
Well, we spoke to Ross earlier this week, and we were told he wouldn't answer any questions about tonight's episode.
But so
we're
said
not going to ask him.
He would give us some juicy info, though. So we're excited about that. We're excited about that. And you guys only hear it here first. What's the name of our show? Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
Anyway.
Maybe we should shorten our name. Maybe more people would come into our chat room.
Who knows? Anyway, guys, tonight on The Walking Dead, I think what we're going to see, we got our guest tonight, Ross Marquand, Aaron on the show. Him and Daryl Dixon, of course, Norman Reedus, is out in the woods, and they've seen a campfire. And they're getting ready to head in that way to see what's going on there. You have Rick and that whole mess happening in the town. Diana, whatever. She's going to try
Diana!
She's going to try to flex on Rick, and that will not fare too well for the group. I think Michonne's going to be torn, and while they fight amongst each other, outside invaders will come into the picture. That's my prediction.
See, people say, who's Diana? I say, she's Captain Janeway.
Who's Diana? What do you think's happening tonight, Nate?
I got a feeling that we're going to see Rick bound and gagged for a portion of this. But not physically, perhaps, but definitely locked up and not given his freedom. His position definitely pulled.
Yeah.
And now we're going to see people leaning towards, you know, the problem when you go in physically against somebody like, say, the only doctor in the town is that people are going to be thinking, whatever he did, we need him.
Right.
So, and they got to keep him happy. So how do you deal with a situation like this? And this is a fair thing for Diana to deal with. And to be fair, she's a politician. Worse than a politician, she's a congresswoman.
Yes.
People in Congress don't make decisions, Sean. They form committees.
Right.
So, because they want everyone's opinion on this kind of stuff. And quite frankly, I do not see this going well for Rick. But I do think by the end of this episode, we're going to be headed in a direction that's going to lead this entire group, including the people from Alexandria, to where they realize they need Rick.
I think
they're going to see that they need Rick. And I think Rick is going to that's the question. When Rick realizes that he's needed, is he going to abuse that power or use that power?
I don't know. I think he will try, and we'll see what happens. But in a closing note here, this is our last episode of Rot Talk until October. But Demon Hunter, we might have to come up with another G&D original because they just released the information this week of the companion series that people are hating. They're hating the name of the new series. It comes out late summer. So we're not going to have to wait till October. That's what they're saying, late summer. Fear the Walking Dead. What do you think of this title? Too close?
Yeah. No. So,
too close, Too close.
You and I learned working in television.
Yes.
That nobody wants anything new. They all want something that's already out there.
Yeah.
That they can expand upon.
And they can get bored with and gripe about.
Yeah. So, I think the titles, just trying to bring people in who are already Walking Dead fans, which, why not? They've got the fan base out there, number one show around the world, right? Why not use that to their advantage? But
they got to be careful, man.
I don't know.
They got to be careful, bro.
I'm not thrilled with the title. I think I'll watch it. I think I'll watch at least the first couple episodes to try and get a taste for it, but we'll see.
Well, we got to understand, too, because you and I have done TV, and we know we went through about six title changes before it actually aired. So this might not be it, guys. This might not be it. They're giving you some early stuff. Anyway, Demon Hunter, we got to go to break, bro.
Oh, my. Well, yeah, we are expecting a phone call, aren't we?
Yes, we are expecting a phone call. Tonight's guest.
Da-da-da.
I don't know why people be tuning in just now, but if you are, from The Walking Dead, actor-director Ross Marquand stops by. He portrays Aaron on the hit AMC show, as I mentioned before, The Walking Dead. He's going to be here in studio. Guys, get ready. This is epic. And I know we're ready. We're excited about it. Ross Marquand, guys, he's going to be in studio. He's going to be answering questions, too. So if you can hurry up and get in chat, it's real easy. throw those questions out. We'll see if we can get him to answer it for you. Tonight's band, Demon Hunter. Name of the band is So Brown. Name of the song is Bad Love. Shadow Nation.
Goes bad.
Demon Hunter. We'll be right back.
Couldn't find my good love, so got me some bad love instead. The kind that gets even, the kind manipulates in bed. And she was a scorpion, she had lasers in her eyes. Things got uncomfortable, so I got wasted every night. I'd hide out in the bathroom wondering what I'm gonna do to get me out of this bad love, yeah. But it didn't start out that way. The beginning was just fun, and we ran like rock stars. I thought my life had just begun, and I thought I could help her, could ease the demons in her mind. But it didn't work out that way, and I was running out of time. I'd hear her coming home, it sent a shiver through my soul. Just get me out of this bad love, yeah. Sadness, nights of liquid cocaine. The walls were crumbling and getting harder to contain. So I tried to end it. She held a knife up to her wrist and said, if you leave me, then it's gonna be like this. So I climbed up on the balcony. I couldn't take it anymore. Just get me out of this bad love. The night got cold, I didn't have nowhere to eat. I might not die there, but I just could not leave it be. Couldn't find my good love, didn't even know what that might mean. But I believe to my soul I don't want to go back there again. Just keep me out of that bad love.
Come back here. This is Scott Wilson from The Walking Dead, and you're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only mystifying oracle of radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Tonight's guest, he's an American actor. He received his degree in theater from the University of Colorado at Boulder. He's an accomplished voiceover artist and has been involved with numerous projects. He portrayed a young Paul Newman on the television series Mad Men, and most recently, he's known for his role of Aaron on the AMC smash hit The Walking Dead. Shadow Nation, please help us welcome Mr. Ross Marquand to studio. Ross, what's up, my friend?
How are you guys doing?
See that, Ross? We now know everything about you that can be found on Wikipedia.
Yep, you've done your research. I think the interview is over, right? You got it covered. So
we're done now.
We're good. Tell everyone everything
about you.
Yeah. Yeah, I edited that. That wasn't totally off his IMDb account. I did edit. Come on, man. Anyway, Ross, thanks for coming by, brother. I know you've been busy.
Tell me, Ross. since you made it to The Walking Dead, how many times have you gone back to your IMDb page just to see that on there? It's
out of control. I mean, I've been a fan of this show since the very beginning. I remember watching that first Halloween episode in 2010 with my friends and just being absolutely floored. So as a longtime fan of the show, to now be on the show, I mean, there's no other way to describe it but surreal. I mean, it's out of control.
Well, I was at Toys R Us with the kids last weekend. I seen Daryl Dixon in his motorcycle, and I'm waiting on the Aaron action figure because, brother, that's got to be the ultimate feeling to have your own toy.
Oh, man, I would love that. You know, my parents actually were asking if that was in the works, and I said, I have no idea, but I would love to see an Aaron action figure someday in the store. Then my brain might fire all the synapses at once, and I might just have an embolism, but that would be incredible to see. Yeah.
In Times
and those Walking Dead action figures, they actually take the people into the three-dimensional booth and copy them. Right? They scan you to make the action figure. So when the time comes, you'll know because they're going to say, can you wear your costume to the...
Wow, I didn't know. So they have one of those 3D printing scanners?
Yeah. I was watching a special. Imagine that. I was watching a special on The Walking Dead, Sean.
Yeah.
And they were showing how they were making the Rick action figure. And I was like, ooh... High tech. Now you have all you can run your finger down the action figure and feel all of Michonne's muscles.
Yeah.
So
you know when Ross gets his own action figure and he's mind blows the next day on the news. In the news today, actor Ross was found naked in the bathtub playing with his own G.I. Joe man, you know? I didn't say
that. Wouldn't that be a way to go? Just like Jim Morrison, you know.
Yes. Was he playing with G.I. Joe? I didn't. Anyway.
No, he was in the bathtub.
I made the connection. So anyway, Ross.
It was a loose connection.
You're American actor. You're born in the mountains of Colorado. How did Indeed. It all, where did the magic happen, brother? Tell us all about it.
Well, just Colorado, where did the magic happen there?
Where did the fire start?
Well, we
start?
All know where the magic happens in Colorado. It happens down at the corner where people can pick up
the Rocky Mountain High, yeah, of course. I was born in Fort Collins, Colorado. Started doing plays in church and Boy Scouts from a very early age. And eventually thought that I kind of enjoyed doing that. And as time went on, started doing more plays in middle school and high school, and finally decided, you know, at the end of my senior year to major after a brief stint as a marketing major, and I just decided the hell with that, I could do my passion. Right. And so I got a BFA, like you said, University of Colorado Boulder, and shortly thereafter moved out to Los Angeles, and it's been a long, steady grind of unpaid work and unemployment and the same old story here time and time again, and finally landed the show of my dream. So I feel like the luckiest guy on the planet. I feel like I won the lottery, honestly.
You know, we did some TV. Of course, it was canceled after the first season. But we
That's
did.
That's okay. At least you still did some TV, you know.
Well, yeah. And you know what kind of boo-boos you must have, man? Big ones to go out in LA like that, because I'm buried out here in the cornfields of Indiana, and Nathan's in Connecticut. Yeah, and we got discovered. You know what the market's like here. We're close to Chicago. That's it for me.
Yeah.
And Nathan's close to Manhattan, but everybody says, dude, you're in the wrong place. Go to LA. Now I'm 39 years old now, so magic's going to have to strike twice to get back to TV out here. But I mean, how did you get that courage to say, that's it, man? I am going to go. This is it. What was that one thing that set you off?
For me, it was just that I didn't have a plan B, to be honest. I don't know if that was courage or stupidity, but,
it worked.
I've done every odd job on the planet. I've really run the gamut of the worst type of possible jobs. I used to be a guinea pig for medical studies, actually, for a long time. Up until a few years ago when my body finally gave out and I started to develop these red spots on my stomach. And I said, well, maybe this is enough.
And now we know where the Walking Dead virus started.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I think I seen that episode on House on Netflix rerun.
You know? Right. I think for me, it's just there was no other option. There was no other plan. So
yeah.
As much as I thought, you know, this is a one in a million shot, I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep working on it. And if it works out, great. If I die penniless and in Studio City or, you know, wherever, then so be it, you know, because that's just what you got to do if you love it, you know.
And well, then you get a call to be on Mad Men. And yeah. Did they tell you you were trying for Paul Newman?
Yeah, well, you know, they're very, you know, Mad Men and also with Walking Dead, I would imagine most AMC shows, they're very, you know, tight-lipped about their programming, and they don't want any sort of spoilers, you know. So I had some concept that I was going to be doing that, and certainly when I got there, you know, got the script, and then they said, you know, we do want you to audition for Paul Newman. I said, oh, great, that's fantastic. He's one of my favorite actors. So they sent me some private links to, you know, his work from that era. They wanted me to focus on late 60s Paul Newman, which is a totally different sound from early, you know, like 50s Paul Newman.
Yeah.
He'd been smoking for a while, so he had a certain rasp to his voice, and you know, the way he spoke was kind of like this, you know. So they wanted me to go with that, and I'll never forget the night before the audition, I was just watching this clip over and over again, and I didn't feel like I had the rasp down, you know, so I started smoking cigarettes to kind of get that quality, and I must have smoked like almost an entire pack, and I kept recording it, playing the clip back, and I felt like I got it there perfect. It was just right in that perfect intonation, and so I went to bed feeling all, you know, good about myself. I said, I got the voice, I nailed it, this is gonna be great. I woke up the next morning and I got to the audition. I hadn't talked to anybody all day, and I the very first time I opened my mouth was in front of the casting assistant, who said, hi, are you here for the Paul Newman part? I said, hey, yes, I am.
For Satan?
Sorry. Yeah, no, I'm here for the Paul Newman part. And I bombed the audition.
No.
I know for a fact that I absolutely bombed the audition. But luckily, the director of the episode had seen my work, some of my impression work before, and he said, don't worry about it. This guy, I think he just had a bad, you know, he must have just taken that cigarette note to heart too much. And he just, you know, he messed the audition, but he's great. Don't worry about it. And so luckily this guy who I'd never met before vouched for me. And truly, that's the reason why I got that part, because I think had he not seen any of my other work, they would have said, that guy was terrible. I can't even say anything like Paul Newman, you know?
Yeah. Well, Stan, so, I mean, you jumped from Mad Men into The Walking Dead, man. It's got to be surreal. It's got to be like walking on little rays of sun. Like Michael Rooker's been on here, Mikey, and Scott Wilson, legend, Scotty Wilson, and Chad Coleman. And then, you know, you're here. And
much lower on the totem pole.
No, you're right up there, sir. And I tell you what, the thing about you guys is everyone we have come on here has been so cool. And one of the casting things they must look for, Nicotero and all of them, is the guys that are down the earth that you want to grab a beer with and sit down and chill, because you guys are like that. You know what I mean? We do a lot of celebs, but you guys come on from The Walking Dead and have blown us away because you're so down the earth. What do they look for when you go in for a casting on The Walking Dead?
Well, thank you for saying that, first of all, but, you know, there's definitely a work vibe that Galen Hurd and Scott Gimple have been very vocal about wanting to create on set. They definitely don't like divas. I mean, they don't like them, and they don't allow them to live very long, you know. I mean, not to say that anyone that I've experienced in the show has ever been like that. Everyone from Andy Lincoln on down, they're just the sweetest, most hardworking people there are. I mean, I've never been on a set where everyone is just so happy to be at their job and does their job very well and doesn't bitch and moan ever. You know, they show up to work at sometimes, you know, the crack of dawn. They sometimes are there for 14, 15, 20 hours a day, and they go home with a smile on their face because they know they're working on one of the best shows on TV, arguably, you know, the most watched show on the planet. So, it's a wonderful feeling, and I think they don't take that lightly. No one does, myself included. I mean, it's you really feel like you're part of something very, very special, you know?
Now, you just got back, Ross, from Zimbabwe.
I did.
Did anybody, it's the most watched show on the planet. Did anybody know who you were there?
Amazingly, only two people. Oh. And it was wild because I was actually down there with Denai and doing work for her nonprofit. You know, that's actually where she was raised. Yeah. And, you know, it was wonderful being down there and you know, kind of working with some artists who, you know, are trying to get their feet on the ground. Basically, her organization, Almasi, is a nonprofit that helps actors and writers in Zimbabwe get on their feet and find their voice. And it's an incredible opportunity she gave me to be a part of that. And, you know, ironically, even though she is one of the biggest characters on the show in her own country where she was raised, hardly anybody recognized her too. So I think it really just, I mean, maybe it's the dreadlocks, who knows? And I certainly right now, I'm rocking a Morrison beard myself, so no one really can put two and two together. You're like, it doesn't really look like Aaron, but some people were able to look past the beard and they recognized me. But
right now you have Crazy Rick beard going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, since he shaved off, someone's got to carry the torch, you know?
You got to. I liked Crazy Rick. I'm going to like Crazy Aaron even more, man. That's what a lot of people are saying, too, because we've been to we got a lot of Walking Dead fans listen to the show. And we do a lot of the blogs they cover, and everybody speculates on everything. They thought that Daryl Dixon was going to, you know, announce that he would be the first gay character on The Walking Dead. And, of course, you came out, and, you know, people did not see that coming. Of course, the people that read the comic books, they followed that. I hadn't been reading the comic books, so I didn't.
I wouldn't tell Sean what was coming there, but did they tell you when you went into the audition again on this that you would be auditioning for the first homosexual character in the apocalypse?
No, they didn't. You know, they mentioned that there might be some same-sex kissing, and would I be comfortable with that? And I said, sure. I mean, you know, and you know, more to the point that Alana, of course, you know, she was the first lesbian character on the show.
That's
So it was funny because, you know, that was touched on in a few episodes, and it certainly was discussed for a little bit, but then it really wasn't addressed as much for her character moving forward. So they basically said that, are you comfortable with that? I said, no, that's fine. And then the audition was rather simple. Actually, we taped a couple times, and they had me come back just about an hour later to, you know, try a new note that she had, because the showrunner, Scott Gimple, has, you know, this real affinity for comedy and improv, and he really wanted to know that there was, you know, certain comfortability with it within my performance, that I could go there and bring out sort of that wisecracking side for Aaron, because that's certainly reflected in the comic books. He's kind of this wisecracking smartass.
Right.
And, you know, they were happy with what they got. And honestly, that was it. It was such a very simple audition process that I was genuinely surprised when they called me a week later and told me I got the part. I couldn't believe that they didn't want me to come back in or do another taped audition. They just said, yeah, you got it. Yeah. And I was blown away.
Well, now, did you pack up and move to Georgia?
Yeah, well, basically a week later, they had me on a plane. A week after I found out I got the part, you know, they were still shooting the episode that they were finishing up at that point, which I think was 509. Yeah, that makes sense. 509 had just started filming, so they were working out the details at that point. And then I got out there a week later and was pretty much in Atlanta off and on for those next 4 or 5 months.
Has that city became a shrine to The Walking Dead yet, man?
Oh, man, it's incredible. And the people there just, I mean, they just love the show. You know, they cannot stop talking about it. They just absolutely, you know, adore. I mean, it was wild because I, you know, would go out with some of the cast at the times in Atlanta, and you know, no one knew who I was because, of course, my episodes hadn't aired. But whenever we would go out with Steven or Norman, you know, they would just get swarmed. Yeah. you couldn't go out because they're just, you know, such rock stars. And people just would love to get a selfie with them or get their autographs. And I just think it's a testament to the fan base. They're absolutely loyal to a T. And I think their mecca, the epicenter of the show, is definitely, like you said, Atlanta.
Yeah. You know, a lot of things on this show we cover that a lot of other shows don't, because we're actual fans. We really want to know things like the Alexandria Free Zone. Is that a real place, or is it just prop homes and things like that?
That's an absolutely real place. And I think I can say that now because I've read some other articles from other folks in The Walking Dead who have talked about it. But yeah, it's a real community that was started, I think, about 15 years ago, I want to say. There's homes that have been there for about 150 years. There's actually a really nice historical home that's, I think, from the late 1800s. But yeah, the rest of the homes there and some of the condominiums that you see a lot of the shoots from the last two episodes, those were built in the last 15 years because they just felt like it was going to be this huge area, like this, you know, really nice, quaint town just south of Atlanta. And then all of a sudden, of course, the housing market, the bubble burst, and a lot of those condominiums were empty. And so when the folks at AMC came along and said, you know, can we potentially rent this space for the next year or so, would that be all right? And they were very amenable to the idea, and it's been a wonderful place to shoot. That the townspeople who actually live there have been so wonderful. But whenever they have to get home, of course, they're running errands, they get groceries, we have to, you know, call cut, and they we let them drive through. And
so it's like a bunch of kids playing street hockey. All of a sudden they yell car, and everybody goes running out of the way.
precisely. No, it's been a blast.
Are there houses still available in there? Because, you know, I might rent a house where I could look out the window and watch them filming The Walking Dead.
That I don't know. I do not know that. I imagine they probably put the kibosh on that because, you know, the people who are already living there, they get to their grandfathered into that whole contract. But I think, you know, there's probably a lot of people clamoring to move into those spots. You know? That I do not know.
Now, Ross, the first day you're on set, brother, you walk out there with all these rock stars. Like you said, they're established. They're in their fifth season. You're on the set. You're right in the middle of it. Is there some kind of, because Scott told us that you guys go eat together. It's a family on the set. It's a total goof troop. Is there a rite of passage? I mean, before you get brought into the group, is there a rite of passage?
Well, for me, it was you know, the first cast member I met was Andrew Lincoln, and within the first 5 minutes, well, first of all, he greeted me with this massive hug. He's like, "Hey, I'm Ross, I'm playing Aaron." He just gave me this great big hug. He's, "Oh man, we're so great! Can't believe you're here. It was great to have you." And then within the first 5 minutes, we both found out that we had a mutual friend in London that I had worked with a couple of years earlier and that he'd grown up with. So it was really, really kind of strange that way. And everyone was just extraordinarily nice and generous. I mean, I remember Cudlitz and McDermott both, you know, I met them right after Andy and they said, you know, "Here's our numbers. If you need anything, just let us know." I mean, the rite of passage wasn't so much, you know, frat boys with paddle sticks. It was more hugs and you know, "Here's my phone number. Let us know if you need anything." So it was great.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
What's that?
I said, "Thank you, sir. May I have another?"
right. Very dazed and confused. Yeah. So it was fantastic. You know, they were all, there was no drama. Like I said before, they were all really welcoming, and I was touched, and I was really blown away because I did not know what to expect. I had no idea, and everyone was beyond nice, and still is to this day.
And you came in the fifth season.
Is
there anybody that has died off of the show that you wish you'd gotten the chance to work with?
Oh, of course. I mean, of course, most recently, you know, Chad and Lawrence. I mean, I love their work both on this show and The Wire. And you know, like you said, Scott. And even to, you know, even though in the comics they never would have this opportunity to work together, but certainly working with Herschel, with Scott would have been just amazing. I just love how he portrayed that character. I mean, it was such a subtle, you know, and lovely performance throughout that series. And I really admired his work on that show.
Yeah, you can go on YouTube right now, and people are actually doing reaction videos to, like, death scenes when Herschel got his head whacked off.
Spoiler alert!
Awesome. If nobody's caught up,
I jumped out of my seat. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. No, are you kidding me? It's like, why? Why does this have to happen? You know?
Oh, man.
Well, the funny thing was that night he came on our show.
The night that aired,
he came on our show, and so, like, just before it happened, he's like, "Well, you know, there's not a lot of people who can say they have their head in their closet." And we were like, oh, no.
No, we didn't make the connection. Oh. Come on. We didn't make the connection. We had no idea.
Well, you hadn't
seen the show yet? Oh, man.
Yeah. It was better than when Mike Rooker came on and jokingly we said, hey, Mike, we know you're not allowed to talk about the show, but how are people going to feel when you get killed next week? And there was just a long pause.
Yeah. It's Nathan's funny humor there.
So it's
because
my fault.
Called it.
Yeah. Yeah. See, we're very.
Called it?
Oh yeah.
And
there was no way that people knew this was coming because, you know, Merle's character wasn't in the comic book, so nobody knew it was coming. And afterwards, I just went to Sean. I said, I think I blew it.
Yeah, you did.
And they're never going to let another Walking Dead guest come on our show. And fortunately, that has not been the case.
We
obviously.
Got Ross.
Wow.
Well, now you did blow it because Ross is going to go back to the stage and go, look, there's two goofy guys, okay? And don't go on their show because they try to give spoilers out.
No, it's fine. It's all good.
Now, listen, brother, you were an all-American kid. I know we're going backwards here, but I didn't get to cover it. Eagle Scout, man. In the Boy Scouts of America, you made rank of Eagle Scout. How do you get that? Because I was never into Boy Scouts. And has that helped you when you're out in the woods roaming around doing the Walking Dead stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there isn't a day that, I mean, because I camp all the time. And there isn't a day that goes by that I'm not grateful for the training that I got in the Boy Scouts. And certainly when you get to Eagle, it takes, you know, 7 or 8 years of, you know, a lot of hard work to get to that spot.
Right.
And, you know, even on the set, you know, some of the knot tying thing, you know, when we were doing the lasso for buttons and I was showing them the bowline knot and the sheepshank and, you know, some of that stuff. I mean, because, you know, you're having to do this on the fly and, you know, it's nice to know how to do a lasso sometimes, you know, it's nice to know how to tie a bowline knot if for no other reason than that could save you if you're falling down a mountain, you know, and, luckily we didn't have to do anything like that, rappelling or whatnot, but certainly that stuff is coming to play a number of times in a lot of the roles that I've played over the years.
Yeah, a lot of my girlfriends in college really appreciate the fact that I had learned to do that. And wow, laughter from Ross. See, he's a comedian. I get no laughter. Jesus.
It would have been better if it was funny, Sean.
I tried.
Now, the character.
I was holding my laughter for the joke. I wanted it to sit there.
Thanks, Ross. Laugh on top of it, you know? Anticipation.
Yeah.
Thanks
exactly.
for that. Yeah. I'm sure everybody, when you go into a nightclub and you let out a joke, I'm sure you're always appreciative that people leave space for laughter there. But your character, Aaron, in the comic books, has a long and productive life as Rick's best friend. Do you foresee a long and productive life with Rick on The Walking Dead?
He can't answer that.
I sure hope so. I mean, it's, like I said, it's one of my favorite shows, and working with Andy and any member of the cast members has been a real dream come true, but... You know, it is a show called The Walking Dead, and you're cognizant of the fact that people die almost every episode. So, you know, I hope that I do have a long life on this show. I will stay on the show for as long as they'll have me, and as long as that character serves the plot and the storyline. But God forbid if that day should come, I'll bow out with as much grace as I can and move on. But I hope that day doesn't come. truthfully, I really don't. I don't want it to end. I wanted to stay on the show for as long. I would stay on the show for 10 years if it was on that long. Honestly, it's that good of a show. It's now, that much of a fun experience.
Out of all the character, I know we're running out of time. Out of all the character impersonations you do, who do you think would be best fit to survive a zombie apocalypse? What character?
I think it's a toss up between Brad Pitt and Liam Neeson. Well, I mean Brad Pitt is precisely because of World War Z, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, he could just walk out there and be like, listen, Angie and I got this. We've got 16 kids. We know how to handle a zombie apocalypse, right? We can go out there with our machetes and our shotguns, whatever we got, man. Tanks, you name it. Shit. It's going to be amazing, yeah? He'd be fine. He'd be totally fine.
He'd do it.
And then Liam Neeson, with his particular set of skills, he could go out there and he could take down any number of zombies. Absolutely. You know, he could be fine. Both those guys would do enormously well out there, I think.
Oh, now, amazing.
You were prepped for this by Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a zombie fan before this? Because a lot of people are actually out there prepping for the zombie apocalypse. So,
yeah.
You
know,
Were you a zombie fan, and were you prepped for the zombie apocalypse before you went in?
I'm a huge fan of the zombie subculture, but I never was necessarily prepping for a zombie apocalypse per se. That seems, you know, I mean, it's not totally far-fetched with all the diseases going around right now, but I think for me it was more just a general prep for, you know, the fact that I live in Los Angeles and there's earthquakes all the time, and you know, you never know what's coming. You know, our time on this planet is totally uncertain. So you gotta have a trunk full of goodies no matter what's coming, you know?
That's it, brother. But hey, I know we're running out of time and I know how busy you are, brother. And thank you so much for coming on. Could you stay on the line just 1 second while we close the show?
I'd be happy to.
Where can our listeners find out more about you, Ross?
Check me out on my website. You go to rossmarquand.com. You can go to Twitter @RossMarquand, same handle on Instagram. And that's probably the best way to stay in touch.
That's it, guys. Ross, you're amazing, and we wish you all the best with The Walking Dead and everything you do, brother, because like I said before, you are amazing.
Thank you very much.
Let's pay the bills, Nate.
Sure, I'd just like to say, don't die, Ross. Don't die.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Fingers crossed. And thank you for saying that.
Hey, guys. Special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey, are you listening? They want to know, so check them out at actionaudioapps.com. Midnight Syndicate, Creative Commons, and Free Music Archives. Thanks for the tunes from the haunted back roads of America. This has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night, guys.